Today on Vox Talks, what keeps children honest? Welcome to Vox Talks from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. A child should always say what's true and speak when he is spoken to. Well, that's what Robert Louis Stevenson recommended 100 years ago in his poem, The Whole Duty of Children. But anyone with kids knows that any child who always told the truth, well, it'd be pretty unusual. So if some kids lie a little and some kids lie a lot, is that just the way they are? Can we increase a child's honesty in day-to-day life, and how long would the effect last if we did? Well, that's the topic of new research that's just out, and I'm joined by Johannes Arbela of the University of Oxford, who is one of the authors. Johannes, welcome to Vox Talks.
Hi, Tim.
Now, Johannes, why? Why are we doing this? Why is a child's honesty something that economists should worry about rather than their parents or their teachers, who definitely do worry about it?
They should definitely also worry about this, but also economists should worry about this. There's two things. First of all, why should economists care about children at all? Mm. Well, children don't really make large monetary decisions. So in that sense, in this very narrow sense, economists shouldn't worry about them. But they already make quite important economic decisions, investing in their human capital and so on. But even more important for economists is that these children obviously don't stay children. They grow up to become adults. And so when we want to understand differences between adults, when we want to understand inequality in society, when we want to understand why certain countries manage challenges better than others, then we need to look at children to see where these differences are coming from. Obviously, we don't need to only look at children, but we should also look at children. And the second thing is, why should we care about honesty and then honesty in children, or where differences in honesty are coming from? Well, you know, if you've done Econ 101, you know that there's quite a lot of asymmetric information in economics. You know, Akerlof's market for lemons, there's a used car dealer, and the guy tells you about the quality of the car, and that could be true or could be not true. And then you can think of a job applicant that tells you about their skills, and that could be true or not true. Or you can think about you talking to your tax authorities, telling them about your earnings, and that could be true or not true. And across all of these situations, honesty plays an important role. And that's sort of, we've seen this in economics for, I mean, since Akerlof's time, really, sort of for quite a long time. I think more recently, we've rediscovered, economists and everybody have rediscovered, how important honesty is for the working of society. If you take politicians sort of just telling blatant lies, we've seen this obviously in the States quite a lot. We've seen fake news. That's why it's so important to understand why some kids grow up to become honest adults and some kids don't.
You did study some kids in this research. Did you choose a particular age group?
Our study went for about 4 years. So this covered an age range of about 8 years to about 12 years. So this is sort of late primary school. Mm-hmm. I mean, we didn't do this by accident. It's a good time to study honesty in children because at that point in time, preferences for honesty, the way how children behave and then hopefully then behave later isn't quite set yet. But that's a very important time in the development of children. At the same time, for honesty, you need to know a little bit about others. The technical term is theory of mind. So very small children, when they start lying about 3 years old, their lies are very unsophisticated. And because they don't understand how to lie in a convincing way. And for that, kids have to be a little bit older. And about eight, all the kids know how to lie quite sophisticated. Or if they want to lie, they know how to do that.
Yet everyone that's got kids is nodding along with this, saying, yes, I remember this very well. First experiment that you did, well, the first piece of research that you did here was to focus on how honest children were and comparing that with the characteristics of their parents. Well, as you said, by the age of eight, children are pretty good at lying sometimes. So how could you work out how honest children are?
So we use an experiment. Many economists, psychologists, and sociologists use this type of experiment. We basically ask the children to roll a die in private. So we don't know at all what they've rolled. And then we ask them to report what they rolled. Mm-hmm. And we give them incentive to lie because we just pay them whatever they tell us. So if they report a six, then they get £6. And if they say one, they get £1. Now, how can we learn about behavior in this setting? Any child could get lucky. There should be some sixes. So we cannot judge an individual child. But we do know that not every child can roll a six. So if everybody says six, we know that something's going on. And so then for a group of children, we can determine by how much they lie or whether they lie at all or how honest they are. The experiment that we used in our setting was a little bit more complicated, but that's basically the idea that we follow, that we can judge the behavior of a group of children in our setting, even though each individual child can go around lying and we cannot tell whether they told the truth or not.
I see. So you weren't sort of spying on the kids. You were just using the statistical prevalence of sixes in this case to work out whether it's likely that they told the truth or not.
Exactly. You say it better than I can say it. Exactly. There were no secret cameras. So we actually do not know whether one individual child has lied or not.
Then when you found out how honest these groups of children are and compared it with the characteristics of their parents, what did you find out?
So we find that children from richer families are more honest. Ooh. Perhaps more interesting, we find that children are also more honest when they come from families where the parents are more trusting and use a warmer parenting style. So a warm parenting style that captures several things, but one of the main components is whether parents punish their children when they do bad things, whatever they disobey or whatever the situation is. And that's actually very interesting because we know from psychology that the very first lies that children make, as I said, when they turn about three, many of these very first lies are about avoiding punishment. And again, parents will know this. The first lies that children do is this, oh, I didn't do this. Who spilled milk? Wasn't me. And at the beginning, that's not very convincing, but really sort of the first urge for children to lie is to avoid punishment. Hmm. And now it seems that what we find is in line with the hypothesis that children lie to avoid this punishment. And if there's no punishment around, then they have less of this urge. And so in families, when there's less punishment, children have less of this urge to lie and then perhaps develop more honesty in general. Because obviously in our setting, there was no punishment directly. So this wasn't about avoiding punishment. This was more about generalized type of behavior that these kids showed in our setting, even though there was no direct punishment.
Now, stage two in this is you set out to find out whether you could encourage kids to lie less. What children did you use for this? Was it a random sample? Or did you focus on a particular type of child?
So we recruited about 600 children from an area in the western part of Germany around Cologne. And we focused on children from low socioeconomic backgrounds. So this is children with poorer parents or single parents or parents with lower educational attainments. And then we took these children to randomize them into a one-year mentoring program. And that's the main intervention that we're studying. Mm. We also recruited children, about 150 children from high socioeconomic backgrounds, so from richer families, to have them as a further comparison group. But we don't enroll them into this mentoring program. So the mentoring program is really about low socioeconomic background children.
And what did these mentors do? Did they try and educate the children that lying was wrong, or was it a more generalized intervention than that?
So this was about a year long. So mentors would spend about an afternoon, one afternoon per week with these children, up to one afternoon a week for up to a year. But this program is not about directly teaching children to be honest. This is really much more generally about strengthening basic skills and non-academic abilities of the participating children to then in turn to increase the chances to succeed in life and in school. So this is done by enriching the social environment. These mentors, they meet the children, they do everyday things. They go to the park, play football, they might go to the zoo, they cook together, they just talk, they do handiwork. So this is not about teaching the children directly about this. This program calls informal learning. While doing that, through this interaction with the mentor, through this new caring relationship, through this new attachment person in the life of these children, the hope is that these children learn these basic skills that they need later in life. And perhaps honesty is one of the things that they learn, but there's no direct teaching that lying is a bad thing.
Did it work, Johannes? Did they become more honest?
Yes, they do. So we revisit these children 4 years later, 4 years after the end of this mentoring program, and we interview them again, and we then run this experiment that I described at the beginning, and we find that children that were randomized to participate in this mentoring program, they were more honest, they report lower numbers in this die roll, and they leave more money on the table. And so, A, this is quite a long-term effect. As I said, it's more than 4 years after this intervention. It's also quite a strong effect. It's as big as the difference between girls and boys. So we know from many previous studies, and we also find this in this study, that girls lie less than boys. Girls are more honest than boys. Women are more honest than men. And we find that this mentoring program, the size of the effect of the mentoring program is about as big as the difference between girls and boys.
Well, 4 years is quite a long time, but do you know or do you think that this effect is going to be persistent, is going to last forever?
No, I don't know whether it lasts forever. Mm. 4 years, is, as you say, is quite a long time. It's also 4 years later, these interviews weren't done by the mentors. They were done by professional interviewers that were actually quite different from the mentors. The mentors are volunteering university students. They're quite young, highly educated or becoming educated, while these interviewers, the average age is about 50. They usually don't have university education. So it's a quite a different setting. We didn't mention the mentoring program, and still these children showed these behaviors. I would love to go back after another 4 years or another 10 years. I'm happy to come back to you, Tim, on the podcast and to report
we'll
back.
We'll do another podcast at that point. I can tell yes.
We do know that preferences in generally become more stable over time. So who knows? As I said, these children, when we test them, they're about 12 years old. That's obviously not the end of the road for development, but the likelihood that this becomes more stable over time goes up.
So what's going on here, Johannes? What's changing? How does it work?
Oh, that's a very good question, and I don't really have a very good answer. We don't really know what exactly drives the change in this behavior. It could be that it's the role model of the mentors, that they do honest things in front of the child, and the child says, oh, I want to do what they are doing. Obviously, there could also be direct praise or perhaps some telling off, even though the mentors are instructed to use what I call warm parenting style, so no punishment, sort of a caring relationship. It could be that this direct interaction creates this honesty. Actually, we have data on that because we do find that this program is particularly effective in those families that use a less warm parenting style. So it seems that the mentors can provide something if the parents don't provide them themselves. So if you have a child from a family that uses a very warm parenting style, we see that the mentoring program doesn't really have any effect, perhaps because the family already does whatever is needed. But if the parents don't bring that, then the mentors can step in and provide these resources.
It sounds like there's quite a strong message in this about what good parenting is if you want to develop honesty in your kids.
Yes, this was obviously not designed to create parenting advice, but looking at our results, you would think that, as I said, this warm parenting style, less punishment, more praise, but also more supervision, knowing what the children are doing, caring directly about what the children are doing, that seems to lead to more honesty, both through if the parents do it, but also when the mentors do it. I think more generally, it's just these added resources that the mentors bring in. They substitute some of what the parents perhaps could have done. But then this is not that these parents are bad parents. Many of them are single parents. Many of them have come from poorer backgrounds. They will often not have the time, not have the, perhaps not the energy, not have the ideas to do all of these things. And it's not just about low socioeconomic background. I also don't always have time to go to the zoo with my kids. I talk to you on the podcast instead of doing fun things with my kids. And so it's sort of in general, it seems that spending this positive time with the children seems quite important. I mean, what you've seen in the last year with COVID, we've seen this huge increase in inequality that some parents are able to do homeschooling with high energy. And everybody who's done homeschooling knows how exhausting this is. But then you can do amazing things with the children. But if you're not able to put this energy and this time into this because you have a job and you can't just stay at home with your children, then exactly that's where you see that the children benefit less from that.
But, of course, we're economists, so we always have to think about the policy implications for these things as well. It's a bit difficult for this, isn't it? Because there's going to be ethical problems, aren't there? We can't say to people, we're going to take your kids away and give them better mentors so that they can become better people. And even if there was some policy on that, it must be very difficult to find an appropriate amount of mentors. Can we scale this up? Can we make this some kind of policy intervention in any way?
Oh, it's even more difficult than that. So I think the question that we don't have an answer to is what we actually want this from a point of view of society. I think we're pretty clear that honesty has positive externalities. If the used car dealer is honest about the quality of the car, that's good for me as the buyer. But it's less clear whether being honest is good for the individual. Mm. Yeah. In our example, these kids made less money in the experiment. So there's a direct effect. And perhaps a used car dealer who's always honest is perhaps not a very successful used car dealer. And perhaps a politician who is always honest is perhaps not a very successful politician. That's quite unfortunate that we have this dilemma, this contrast between what might be good for the individual and what is good for for the wider society. And we don't really know. I would hope that over the long term, it's better to be an honest used car dealer, and that is in your interest, and it's better to be an honest politician. But we don't really know. So I wouldn't want to say, let's go in and try to make everybody honest, because perhaps that's not good for each individual. But if someone really doing a great welfare analysis and comes to that conclusion, I think this is a program that could scale. So this is a program that we didn't invent. It's a pre-existing program that is run in Germany. It's called Baloo und Du, Baloo and You, like in sort of in the Jungle Book. And this has been done with about 10,000 kids in Germany before and after this intervention that we're studying. Yes, it is quite expensive in a sense that you need these mentors to spend time one-on-one with these children, but it is possible to scale up. So if anybody would like to implement this in other countries, I think that's a very nice blueprint that one could follow. But it is resource intensive. It also changes the life of these kids.
It's very interesting, Johannes. It's what seems like simple questions have quite complex answers, but also some encouraging results as well. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much, Tim.
The paper that we've been talking about, DP16164, is called Malleability of Preferences for Honesty, and three authors, Armin Falk, Johannes Arbeler, and Fabian Kosser. This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. We bring you the most innovative economic research every week, so subscribe to Vox Talks. You'll never miss an episode. And remember, you can find 12 years of Vox Talks at voxeu.org/vox-talks.